All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
It is game day here in Vancouver, and welcome to Canucks Conversation. It's brought to you by the all-new 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand-new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. I've got a lot of those. I'm sure you do too, Harm. And the BZ4X will get you through. We're coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. Again, welcome to Canucks Conversation Game Day here alongside Harm and Dial. I'm Irfan Ghaffar. Harm, you know, it's exciting when big teams come into Vancouver with the Boston Bruins, the New York Rangers, you know, the Leafs, the Habs. But I think it's always a little more special when the Penguins and Sidney Crosby visit, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, even just locally, among the people that I know who pick maybe a couple games to go to a year, they always have the Penguins game circle. Like, I've got a bunch of friends who don't normally go, and they're going to this one. So it's always special. And I mean, to see Crosby still at the peak of his powers is something else. And it sort of brings me to the biggest question that I have going into this game, even from Vancouver's perspective, is at this point, this Penguins team is literally just Sidney Crosby. If you shut down his line, you win the game. And he's been an animal at 5-on-5. The last time these two teams met, Crosby got on the board twice, and that's why the Penguins Canucks game went to OT in the first place. But for example, you look at the Evgeny Malkin line, for example, and Malkin, first of all, he slowed down himself, but look at his wingers. According to Daily Faceoff, he's got right now Drew O'Connor and Valtteri Pustinen.
No disrespect to those guys, but I don't think Evgeny Malkin even knows who his wingers are. Like, to be completely honest, he's just going about his business and sees their numbers on the board and is like, this is who I'm playing with tonight. And you look at this Penguins team, and you're right, it is only Sidney Crosby. 55 games played this year. He's got 32-28 for 60 points. Could be another 50-point game. Or, sorry, 50-goal season for Sidney Crosby when it's all said and done. But they're nowhere near good in the standings. I mean, they're falling off the face of the planet. And that's why a lot of people are talking about them maybe being sellers as we approach the deadline.
that's the other interesting subplot is Pittsburgh has won its last two games. So it's starting to build a little bit of momentum. They've got five games in hand on Tampa for the final wildcard spot, but they're 9 points back. If the Canucks beat them here, it could be the unofficial death blow for the big three's contention window in Pittsburgh, right? Because it's now or never. Pittsburgh's got to go on a crazy run to justify to Kyle Dubas, hey, don't break this up. And if they do start breaking things up, they start moving pieces like a Jake Gensel, a Riley Smith at the deadline. That's pretty much it. They may try retooling, but in terms of actually contending and being a threat, it's going to be curtains. And it's so interesting, too, that it could be Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, Rick Tocchet, who are so instrumental to Pittsburgh's success. A few years ago, they have the power to kind of put an end to this for Pittsburgh.
We're slowly starting to see the demise of the once was the vaunted Pittsburgh Penguins and how good that they were. From the Canucks' point of view, look, power play changes. I guess we have to get into that right away. What do you make of the shakeup of the Canucks top or the Canucks two power play units?
Yeah, so Tocchet hinted at it at a UBC practice on Friday that if they don't get back on track, that at some point they may have to consider balanced power play units. Personally, I'm not a fan of it. I think you look at most teams around the NHL, there's a reason it doesn't stick. You want to stack most of your talent on one unit, but on the other hand, you do understand that, okay, nothing's been working. You got to try different things. And they went with Hronek on the first unit as well. That didn't really work at all. So now to shake things up again, you balance it out. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I hate it because they have to try something different, but I don't think this is going to be the long-term solution. And specifically looking at the unit they have with Pettersson, just for the people who haven't seen the lines, they've got Baines, Netfront, Myers on the flank, Lindholm, Bumper, Pettersson, right flank, and Hughes manning the point. I just wonder what Tyler Myers is doing there.
I would be shocked if Tyler Myers ends up being there, to be completely honest. I think that, okay, well, you look at the other power play unit, it's Suter, Garland, Besser, Miller, Roenick. No Hoglander? The guy's going to score 25 goals this year. I mean, you're leaving him off of that? I just think it's very bizarre to me to have two units, and I get kind of what maybe Tocchet's trying to do, but I would be shocked if Hoglander isn't on that Pettersson power play unit at some point in the game. Maybe things work, and maybe they end up scoring a goal, but it would shock me if Hoglander doesn't end up being somewhere near there.
Well, I'm just curious what the thought process is, and I don't mean it from a criticism perspective, but genuinely, what are they envisioning Myers' role to be there from the left flank? Are they wanting him to clap bombs like he's Stamkos or Ovi? Do they want him handling the puck? Because it's really tough for a defenseman to make plays from the half wall. When we saw Hughes and Hronek together on the first unit, Quinn Hughes looked uncomfortable playing the left flank.
Yeah.
Right? Who's one of the most skilled defensemen in the league, just because you're making reads and decisions handling the puck in circumstances that you're not used to, because as a defenseman, you're just moving mostly laterally across the point. You're used to manning things from the top, not necessarily making plays from the half wall. So I'm not convinced that that's the solution in terms of Myers in that spot. But the other thing that I just thought was kind of interesting was, when you look at, for instance, and I don't know if this went into the decision-making process at all, but the other unit, which has Suter, Garland, Besser, Miller, and Hronek, when you look at the forwards, especially Garland and Besser, they basically just gave JT the players that he's closest with off the ice as well. Like, he's really good friends with Garland. Of course, he has chemistry with Besser at 5-on-5 as well, but the three Americans there, they're really good friends. And you look at the other unit as well. Lindholm and Pettersson both being Swedes. Pettersson and Hughes are close. Maybe you get Hoglander in there instead of Myers.
The three Swede line again, yeah.
So, again, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but I do think it's interesting that, you've got Miller with some of his closest friends off the ice together, and maybe you're hoping that some of that off-ice chemistry can translate to on-ice chemistry as well.
Rick Tocchet did say that sometimes a break is needed. You need to separate some of the guys, and maybe they can figure it out here, but I agree with you. I don't think that this is the long-term solution. I think when you look at it, you know, the top power play, they need to figure out a way to fix it. Whether that's, you know, the four guys that are there, it's finding a way to get Elias Lindholm the puck, right? When he came in and was a Vancouver Canuck, he had two goals in his debut because he stood in front of the net. Now he's kind of, he was just skating around and not really doing too much else. So it's finding different ways to be creative. There's too much talent on this team, on that top power play unit, for them not to go back to where it was early in the season. So you just have to figure it out. I get maybe that there needs to be a break a little bit of a refresh or reset or what have you, but it's going to be interesting to see what they do tonight and if it does in fact work. Another guy who maybe needs a refresh or a reset, Ilya Mikheyev back again for a second game in a row with Elias Pettersson. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's tough. And this goes back to this whole conversation of not just Mikheyev in that spot next to Pettersson, but it sort of highlights, again, I'm curious what line they choose to go up against Crosby, because on the one hand you could go, okay, JT Miller's been an absolute engine, match him up against Crosby. But when you have last change, there's also appeal to the idea of, okay, if he's cooking this well, why not get him out there against favorable matchups, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh's second and third pairs defensively, their bottom six, the same way that when the Canucks were in Colorado, Jared Bednar made a point of getting the MacKinnon line out against the third line, Vancouver's third line, which had Archie Baines in his NHL debut. So in an ideal world, if you're looking to maybe get Miller out against soft matchups, then your second go-to option in my mind would be Elias Pettersson. But then I think about it from the perspective of he has been a little up and down lately. He hasn't been driving play the way we're used to. And then you have Mikheyev on his wing as well, who's been extraordinarily quiet. I don't know how much confidence I have in that line going toe-to-toe against Crosby either. And then, of course, the other option you have is the Lindholm-Garland-Baines line, which Lindholm's a responsible two-way center, but even though Archie Baines, his two-way habits have been pretty mature for a rookie, he's still only got three games of NHL experience. Do you trust him to go up against
Sidney Crosby?
So, I am curious to watch the deployment factor with matchups.
And then it's just funny to me. I mean, you look at the lines and you want Elias Pettersson. I mean, look, he's having a great season. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's been some knock on his game of late and, you know, things like that. And he maybe looks a little disinterested and things of that nature. But to be completely honest, I mean, even he's probably thinking, you know, for a guy that hasn't had that much confidence in his game, like, why am I playing with a guy like Ilya Mikheyev? I get it. I know there was a meeting with the agent and obviously with Alvin and talking about maybe getting some more ice time for Mikheyev, which proved to be that against the Boston Bruins. Now, they won that game. They ended up coming back and winning. So maybe that's the reason why they go back to it. But Mikheyev's got to do something here. Like, in all reality, I mean, he goes on the ice and there isn't really much going for him. Right? I mean, he barely touches the puck. He's not chasing. He's not tenacious on the forecheck. He's not the guy that they signed from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Now, whether that's coming back from a knee injury, I get that there's certain athletes that are able to do it and come back and be completely fine. And maybe this is just, you know, a process of him still trying to figure out, you know, how his knee's reacting to certain things. But he's just looked like a guy that, you know, has been completely lost.
Yeah. And when you have Pettersson, Miller, Lindholm all playing center,
yeah,
I just don't think going into the playoffs that this team, as currently constructed, has the winger depth to excel that way.
No.
Again, I understand why Tocchet is giving it a look right now, because Pettersson and Lindholm did not have nearly as much chemistry as I think we were all hoping for offensively. That line really wasn't delivering the results we were hoping for. But again, you just look at the wing situation right now, and keep in mind, Dakota Joshua is the only player that's out of your top nine right now, and you're relying on both Ilya Mikheyev. Three of your wingers in the top six are Ilya Mikheyev, Nils Höglander, and Pia Suter.
Yeah.
That's quite the ask on a team that has cup contention aspirations, not to mention you've also got Archie Baines in a third-line role who's just learning the NHL ropes as well. I don't think they're deep enough long-term to make it work, because, yeah, you are going to run into situations then when somebody like Mikheyev has to be in your top six. So at some point you really do hope that Lindholm, whether it's with Miller or more likely with Pettersson, just because of how much chemistry Miller and Besser have had together, that Lindholm can figure it out on the wing because, again, I just don't love the look of the wingers right now.
What have you made of first three games under Archdeep Bane's belt?
I've been impressed.
Yeah.
Obviously, he hasn't registered a point yet. There's been a couple of penalties, so it hasn't been perfect. But watching him play, I think his habits, the subtle things when you watch his shifts back, there's a reason why Rick Tocchet has already been raving about some of those elements. The way he forechecks some of the intelligent routes that he takes. He's ferocious in terms of his back pressure. In the Colorado game, for example, there was a play where Rantanen and McKinnon were carrying the puck up the ice. Baines is hustling back. He forces Rantanen to defer to McKinnon, and then Baines falls through and swoops the puck off of McKinnon's stick. To make that type of play in your NHL debut is really impressive. In the Boston game, in the first period, there was a sequence wall work, right? How much does Tocchet speak about the importance of when you're a winger in the defensive zone and the puck is rimmed around, you have to make the play to get it out. Baines had Forbort pinching down, a big, strong defenseman. He absorbed the contact, won the 50-50 battle, and poked the puck up ahead to Lindholm, who then set up a two-on-one rush opportunity for Connor Garland. So those are the things that, look, for an average fan, you may not necessarily notice it. It's never going to end up on a highlight reel, but those are the quote-unquote staples. Those are the non-negotiables that Rick Tocchet speaks about, that he preaches. And Baines already has a lot of those pat down, despite only having three games of NHL experience, which is massive. And it shows in the ice time too. Since he's come up, he's eighth among Canucks forwards in 5-on-5 ice time, ahead of names like Teddy Bluger, Ilya Mikheyev, Sam Lafferty, who are established longtime NHL veterans.
Well, that's the thing for me. I think it's the trust. And if you're able to earn your coach's trust this early into your NHL career, that's obviously says something that he's been doing well. And I think it's one of those things and a testament to him. And obviously he was an AHL All-Star MVP. So, you know, he's got the chops to be able to play. Now he's making it work at this level. Quickly, who do you want to see something more from tonight? I know the easy answer is Ilya Mikheyev, but who do you want to see something more from tonight?
Maybe a little bit more from Pia Suter, if we're talking about outside of Mikheyev. I know the JT Miller line has been rolling regardless, but I think there have been moments where Suter's gone a little bit quiet. Now he's going to be in a prominent, he's still in a prominent top six role, not to mention he's going to get more power play reps because the units are balanced. So he's going to get more looks on the man advantage. It'd be nice if he can find a way to chip in a little more. And if it's not him, then I look at Elias Lindholm. Want to see a little bit more from him in terms of driving play.
All right, well, let's get to our guest today, brought to you by Greta, the home of our electric watch parties. Greta is our spot to chill pregame, postgame, and all through the offseason as well. Check out Greta Bar YVR today as we welcome in Jeff Patterson. Jeff, the Canucks can surpass their point total with a win tonight. 82 in 60 games this season, finished with 83 last year. What a way for a year to go by for this team.
Yeah, and good for them, but like I'm way more concerned about it. I just came in from shoveling snow. It's like the last week of February. I didn't really, but it's snowing outside my place. There's your weather update. Look, we've seen it's been a magical season for the Vancouver Canucks. I didn't see it coming. I had them as a team that was going to, you know, be on the fringes of the playoffs, and I agreed and bought into what Jim Rutherford said on the eve of training camp, that if everything went right, they could be a playoff team. And you know, I think back to that middle of November where they alternated wins and losses for 10 games and we weren't quite sure where their season was headed, and they took off from there and haven't looked back. And the individual performances, the collective of the group, and here they are as the top team in the National Hockey League, you know, with 2 days to go in the month of February. It's really remarkable. So, you know, for them, it's not about surpassing last season. They want to leave last season in the dust, and they want to add 25 more points to what they've been able to accomplish this year, but you know, baby steps, I suppose. And so, yeah, year over year, just to think that they can surpass last year's point total with 21 games remaining, it's pretty remarkable stuff.
What do you make of the balanced power play units that it looks like the Canucks might roll out? Do you think that might give them a little bit of a spark?
I'm curious to see. I mean, we watched in Seattle the other night where they threw everything against the wall and started with their leading goal scorer, power play goal scorer, and goal scorer Brock Besser wasn't even on the first unit, and then he got on the second time around. And by the fourth time, Philip Hronek had been taken off the power. Like, they were just grasping at straws. So I wonder if there's an element of that. Scoring in overtime against Boston the other day was great. Got them the win, but it doesn't solve their power play issues at all. I mean, that's 4-on-3, and they're trying to get it going back again at 5-on-4. I thought what you said, though, before I joined you, Harm, was fascinating, and the thought crossed my mind earlier in the day when I saw the two groups, and it does feel like kids on the playground and splitting, like putting your best buddies out there together, and then Talkie comes out after the morning and skate and says, hey, sometimes you just need to get away from each other. And I thought, hang on a second, like, we're talking about a first place team, and you're sort of playing into that narrative that you're trying to keep some people away from each other. I don't know. I mean, I was as surprised as you were. Tyler Myers out there. The fact that Archdeep Baines in his fourth NHL game is going to get power play time, like, that's good for him. Pia Suter remains in the power play, and Nils Höglander can't get a sniff. So there are some things that make sense. There are some that don't. You know, the fact you got Petey and Hughes together, you certainly have weapons there, and Lindholm as well. And we all know what Besser and Miller are capable of. So it hasn't been working with the conventional five-man first unit set. I'm down for this for a night, but this is not the long-term solution moving forward for the Vancouver Canucks. They have to figure out a first unit that can absolutely steamroll and crush opponents come playoff time.
But it was there. Like, their power play was absolutely clicking and cooking early in the season. Then it went on a little bit of a hiatus, and then it came back. So from your point of view, Jeff, I mean, you watch every game, you talk about it pregame, postgame, where did things go wrong?
I think this league is so heavily scouted, and Rick Tocchet talked about why Miller off the left half wall on Friday doesn't work when teams are using a diamond, because JT is essentially skating into the guy that's on the side of the diamond. Especially when you have two righties, there isn't that Bo Horvat in the middle to slip the quick pass to the inside, because Horvat was a lefty, obviously, and you've got Lindholm and you've got Besser, and earlier in the season you had Kuzmenko. So I think teams have recognized some of the Canucks' strengths, and this is all about adjustments. And certainly playoff hockey is really all about adjustments. And, you know, you're facing the same opponent up to seven times in a row. They're trying to take away your edge. You've got to try and gain an edge on them any way you can. So, I just think teams have figured out some of the successes and strengths of the Canucks. As great a player as Quinn Hughes is, you know, he doesn't threaten with a bomb from the point. Now, we have seen at times his ability to get shots through layers, and Lindholm's debut is a perfect example of that. Sometimes shooting wide and having a guy pull a puck back into the net. Look, they're going to have to, between the coaching staff and a veteran group that's out there, and as you said, has had success, they're going to have to figure it out for themselves. But I think eventually we're going to see them go back and load up with the first unit, and maybe the fact that they're just giving them a little bit of time apart, it can bring the best out in them whenever that big reunion happens for the Vancouver Canucks power play.
What did you think of Elias Lindholm back at center in a third line role against Boston? And what do you think he needs to do to sort of excel in that role moving forward?
Yeah, I thought he was all right against Boston in sort of that 200-foot game. And look, if you have him on a third line, like, you should be able to create some mismatches against other teams' third lines. If, in fact, that is the Canucks' third line, it's hard to know right now when you got Mikheyev playing. You know, is he on a second or a first line like that? And I know you touched on that. But for the sake of this argument, let's say that Elias Lindholm is their third line center. I don't love the fact that they gave up Kuzmenko, a first rounder, and a prospect, and maybe more, for a third line player. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not the player that I thought they were getting from the Calgary Flames. I thought they were getting a guy that they would bolster their top six. Now, he may wind up there again. But right here, right now, I would say middling is about the best I can do for Elias Lindholm. He's had the two games where he scored twice and absolutely contributed to victories. But on the nights where he hasn't been big on the score sheet, you know, I mean, he's face-off, sure, and penalty killing. And, you know, the one thing that I will do is give him a little bit of a pass to catch his breath. This guy learned of his trade to Vancouver, 30,000 feet in the air, coming home from Cabo, got home to Calgary to pack a bag to go to the All-Star weekend, and hasn't looked back. And we know what their schedule's been like in the 11 games since then. Like, it's just been an absolute gauntlet of no days off, no practice days. So that's got to be difficult for a guy coming to a new team. And I know he's a veteran and he's probably relied on some of that and just, you know, his hockey smarts to get him through. But get him some practices, find him some, you know, regular wingers perhaps. And I do hope that there is more to his game than he has shown to this point. So I get Rick Tocchet trying to go with this strong spine of three centers down the middle and then even Teddy Bluger to solidify that fourth line. But again, with the assets they gave up to Calgary, I thought they were getting a top six guy that was going to turbo boost their top six. Now he's playing in a third line role. That's quite an acquisition cost for a third line guy when you thought you had a third line center in Pia Suter, who is playing above Lindholm now on this depth chart. So there are some things that are a little confusing about the way the Canucks are configured right now.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, as the deadline approaches here in nine or so days, Jeff, that, you know, they might make a move to try and bolster their top six once again, or at least get some depth, whether it's, you know, in that four group or the defense. You mentioned catching your breath. 10 of 12 for Thatcher Demko out of the All-Star break. Is that getting maybe a little bit too much, or how many games do we think that, you know, he's going to end up playing here down the stretch?
Now, there are red flags on this now, without a doubt, and I think it's twofold. I think one is it's an indication that maybe the trust and confidence in Casey DeSmith has waned a little bit with one win in his six starts since Christmas, and, you know, his last time out was eight goals against in the 10-7 loss in Minnesota, and you know, that's tough for a guy. Like, he hasn't had a start since, so he's had to sleep on that for the better part of a week. I think they missed an opportunity in that Chicago game at the end of the five-game trip out of the All-Star break. That felt like it was earmarked for DeSmith, and they went with Thatcher for whatever reason. Look, Casey DeSmith was a great news story before Christmas, but part of that was he played far more regularly, and I think he was able to get into a groove and play better. Now, his lot in life is to be the backup and be ready to go, but I thought this one against his former team, I kind of thought, you know, the losing streak was behind them. I kind of thought this was a point in the schedule where they could slot Casey DeSmith in against a Pittsburgh team that's missing two of its top five scorers in Gensel and Rust. But they've elected to go with Thatcher Demko. So 10 of 12 out of the All-Star break, that's a heavy workload for anybody. It's certainly a greater rate of starts than before the All-Star break when it was around 70%. They have to be careful here, and just getting DeSmith a game in Anaheim on Sunday, you know, if they go right back to Demko for a run of games, that's not getting Thatcher Demko the rest that he needs. And it's not about, like, yes, they want to stay atop the Pacific and the West. I get that, but they've got to find a balance between getting Thatcher Demko time off. And now the schedule is less for them in the month of March with the homestand and, you know, one more set of back-to-backs the rest of the way. And also, when we talk about 10 or 12 starts, like, he wasn't that busy against Boston the other day, right? Like, 22 shots, even with overtime, didn't face a shot in OT. So it's not just the sheer number of starts. It is the workload within each and every one of those. And so I think that's sort of important to keep in mind here. Still, I do. There are red flags, not alarm bells, no panic button, but I'm at the red flag stage with just the sheer volume of starts for Thatcher Demko coming out of the All-Star break.
J-Pat, you've covered this league, this team for a really long time. How much do you believe momentum can carry over from game to game, in the sense that the Canucks were in the middle of a four-game losing streak, snapped it with this unbelievable, thrilling come-from-behind victory against Boston? Do you believe that the momentum from a game like that does translate, or are you of the mindset that every game is kind of its own independent event?
Yeah, I think I kind of lean towards the latter, Harm, that, you know, for, like, if a guy has been struggling and he gets a goal or has a big night, I do think sometimes that just can ease his mind a little bit. He's not thinking about the lengthy drought. You know, I don't know what's going through a guy like Ilya Mikheyev's mind these days, but just in terms of individual performances. But a player like JT Miller is in such a groove right now that I think, you know, he probably can't wait for the puck to drop tonight to get right back at it. So I think more on the individual front than the team. But look, when you hadn't lost more than two in a row and all of a sudden you're losing streaks at four and it was in danger of getting to five, if they had lost to the Bruins, that would have been the storyline heading into this one. If Pittsburgh gets off to a quick start, you know, maybe there's nervous energy in the building, this idea of, are we ever going to win again? That kind of thing. So I think that they can at least kind of relax and exhale that they beat the Bruins. It was a good win. The building was rocking. But it's Sidney Crosby and the Penguins. And I know it's a Tuesday and not a Saturday, but still another marquee opponent here. We saw firsthand how good Sid was when he faced the Canucks a couple of weeks ago. Pettersson was terrific that night as well. So the Canucks can't let up just because the streak is over. They need every point available to them. They're not going to get every single point that's out there for them, but they've got to find a way now to come out of the four-game losing streak and start to put some wins together to get this thing moving back in the right direction, so that, you know, they've been fortunate. And I pointed this out on the weekend that through their scuffles and a record of 4-5-1 over the last 10, on Saturday night, they were 4-5-1 in their last 10 games. So was Vegas. So was Edmonton. So even though it felt sort of like the roof was caving in on the Canucks in the market, at the very least, they lost no ground, no blood whatsoever, and ran 10 games off the schedule for Vegas and Edmonton to try to make up ground on them. So really matching those teams, even with a losing record over 10, like, that's a successful 10-game stretch for the Canucks, because it just meant that there weren't 10 more games off the board for the Oilers and the Golden Knights to work their way any closer to the Canucks at the top of the Pacific Division.
Jeff, you're the best. Lots of storylines heading into tonight's game. The Canucks power play, Sidney Crosby, as Harm says, the demise of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Ilya Mikheyev, and what's going to happen to him playing with Elias Pettersson. But enjoy it, and I'll see you tonight.
Yeah, all those storylines front and center, and we'll break it all down on Rinkwide later on tonight. So I'm on your show, you'll be on mine. That's how this works in this business. Thanks for having me on, guys, and we'll see you at the rink.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
That's Jeff Patterson, obviously, Harm, but coming to us. And, you know, he's been a guy that's covered this team for a very long time, pretty tapped in, knows exactly what's going on. But some interesting, you know, points that he made about this team. And obviously the one that we'll get into is Thatcher Demko, because it might be, I agree with Jeff, a little bit red flaggish that he's made this many starts.
Yeah, I think one factor that JPAT brought up that I think the Canucks internally will be mindful of is not just the specific number of starts, but what's the workload looking like in terms of the shots and chances he's facing. I remember Rick Tockett, we had him on the podcast back when Farhan and I did the VanCast last summer. We asked him about Demko's workload, just because Demko had started a lot through the second half of last season once Tockett had taken over. He said that a big thing they'd look at is what types of chances are we giving up? Because if there are games where they're giving up a lot of cross-seam passes, Demko's having to go side to side, the team's starting to look a little more shaky defensively, games like the Seattle one, for example, that's when I think internally the Canucks get a little bit more concerned about the workload. Whereas if you have more games like the Boston one, I think those are situations where they're more comfortable and think that there's less wear and tear on his body.
Yeah, absolutely. Harm, Vancouver's playing Pittsburgh tonight, so we want to know who's going to score the first goal for Vancouver. And if you nail it, you could win a $25 gift card to the Four Winds Tap Room, located at 72nd and River Road in Delta. Enter by following us on social media. Keep an eye out for today's show clip and comment who you think will light the lamp and score the first goal tonight. Winners will be contacted directly Check us out at Canucks Army or at Canucks Convo on Twitter, at CanucksArmy.com on Instagram, and Canucks Army on Facebook. And make sure you ask about Four Winds Light Lager at your local liquor store, or have some delivered to your front door through the online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca.
I'm debating this. I think it's been a while. I think we're going to go Quinn Hughes, first Canuck goal scorer. What about you?
Well, judging by the way that those power play units have gone, you know what? I'm going to go Archdeep Baines.
I like it.
I'm going to go Archdeep Baines. You know, he's a few games under his NHL belt now. Things are weird with this team. Why not just get him a power play goal to start it?
I love it. All right. Let's transition to anyone else presented by DoorDash. It's our listener's chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listener's chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms apply. Folks, get your questions in. Do you have the live chat open? Or Grady, can you toss some questions in?
Yeah, I will get on that right now.
Sweet. Before we get to some of those questions, I have and anyone else to bring to the table. Does anyone else think that when you compare when each player was the best in the league, that Sidney Crosby is way more likable than Connor McDavid?
Likable?
Yes. I'm not talking on ice. I'm talking strictly as a personality.
Yeah. I mean, look, I would have to agree with you because the knock on Connor McDavid is, I mean, he's so great as a player on the ice, but it's the personality. I mean, we did see it the other day where now he's basically saying that, you know, he's an assist machine. He's not going to shoot anymore. He obviously was saying that jokingly and being sarcastic, but yeah, I mean, I would tend to have to agree with you there. I also think it's markets and the attention that players get. Like Sid in Pittsburgh is not getting the attention of Connor McDavid in Edmonton on a national scale when we look and cover this league, I think. So I think because of that and the way that things have just gone crazy with the way this game is covered, Connor McDavid basically has had a camera in front of him since he's been 5 years old. Sid did as well, but it was a little bit different. It wasn't magnified as much as it is now. So I think that that's why Sid's the more likable guy, because there wasn't that much pressure on him to be that guy from the very beginning.
Maybe. I feel like there was still a ton of hype and attention around him.
No, 100% since, there was.
Like, Edmonton is but it's not the biggest market, though.
It's still a major market in Canada. They win Gretzky. They won Stanley Cup.
Sure.
They're the city of champions, and they have done nothing with Connor McDavid.
I guess, but from an American angle, Crosby in Pittsburgh probably had more appeal than McDavid in Edmonton, too.
Yeah, but I think that now, like, you look at the way that some of these broadcasts are, like, Connor McDavid's now getting on a lot of American television at some point. So, I agree. I definitely think Sid's more likable than McDavid, but I think it's their circumstance as well. Let's get to our listeners. Who would be the worst opponent to lose to in the West if you're the Vancouver Canucks?
I'm assuming this is referring to the playoffs. Let me look through the standings. I want to make sure I give a thoughtful answer here. I think Edmonton would definitely be up there.
Yeah.
I don't think Canucks fans want to lose to Edmonton. Especially just because of the whole narrative of people don't think Edmonton's actually constructed that well, and that they're just riding the wave of McDavid and Draisaitl.
If the rivalry was there, I would say Seattle, but
there is no rivalry. And we're not starting that right now. There's no rivalry there.
But hey, a playoff series might kick it off.
Yeah, that's exactly where rivalries are built.
Right.
Jesse, what percentage of IRF decisions are VIVE versus data-driven? Oh, I don't know. I talked to a lot of people. But I don't know. I think that you look at some of these things or for the Vancouver Canucks, I think that if you're the head coach...
No, he's asking you. Like
my decisions? Oh,
basically, there's a bit where quads will just say what he's feeling as his take. He relies on the vibes.
Oh yeah.
Whereas
you're data driven.
Data driven, super logical.
Oh yeah, you're boy genius.
We want to know what you are. Like, where do you stand when it comes to vibes versus
so eye test or analytics?
Well, no, I mean kind of, but not exactly.
I think you both watch a game and read a game at the same time, right?
Yeah, and that's I think the key.
And I think that the biggest thing is when you look at games and things like that, you know, it's a lot of it, yes, is heavily dependent on analytics, but you know, you still can't equate some of these things in the playoffs. Well, like, I think that
I think you're a gut feel guy.
Yeah. Like, do I have a gut feeling that the power play is not going to work? Absolutely tonight.
Yeah, you're a vibes guy. Yeah, like I think you're definitely a vibes
but,
guy.
Okay, but you're a numbers guy. Do you think this power play, as it's constructed, is going to work tonight?
Probably not.
There you go. So I guess we tend to agree. And there's the guy that, you know, goes with the numbers and the vibes guy. I mean, I don't know. I think that if you really look at it and say, like, that's a pretty good example, right? We both agree on something that is completely different. And they might be doing it for different reasons completely. Assuming the same package could have gotten you Gensel, would you have preferred that instead, or is Lindholm's versatility more useful? That's from Jesse.
I've got a take. Do you have a thought on this first, though?
No, go ahead.
I probably lean toward Gensel. I know that Lindholm has the versatility. I know he has the PK impact, but I just looked at Gensel as a pure goal scorer and went, especially with his hockey sense. And of course, now he's, I think he's still out of lineup. He's still hurt, right?
Yeah.
But the way he reads off Crosby when you watch the Penguins play, I watched that and went, man, he would think the game at the same wavelength as Pettersson. Like I just watched Gensel and thought, man, he'd be the perfect running mate for Pettersson. I also thought Lindholm could have been a decent fit for Pettersson, and that hasn't worked out quite yet. But I think Gensel just is the better pure goal scorer, and not to mention his track record in the playoffs is dynamite. He's got 34 goals in 58 career playoff games, but from the Canucks perspective, you have to remember they wanted to move ahead of the market, make sure that they could acquire one of the big fish, knowing that there weren't a lot of those high-end difference makers available. Gensel probably wasn't available back then.
No. Because
Pittsburgh was still in the playoff race. They were still in a wait and see mode. Kyle Dubas wanted to give his team a chance to right the ship, get things right. So if you're Jim Rutherford and Patrick Elvin, you're thinking, okay, we want to make sure we strike early so that we don't end up in a situation where, let's say, the top two names go off the board and we're talking about all of a sudden, oh, do we have to trade a first round pick for an Adam Henrique, for example?
Yeah.
I think that's where part of it comes down to availability as well, where Lindholm was available then and Gensel probably wasn't back then.
Well, now that Gensel is available, obviously hurt. I've said this before. I don't think the Canucks are fully out on Gensel. I don't think that they're fully out on Christopher Tanev. Vegas is going to come in and offer the world for Gensel and make it work because that's just what Vegas does. And, you know, what a break for them. Obviously, you know, Mark Stone being out forever and you don't know when Eichel's going to come back, but it's an interesting one and one that we still may see happen if the Canucks can figure it out and maybe make something happen with Gensel. Captain Canuck, in the Boston game, they talked about why the Bruins are so hard to play against. And they said because they always play with three guys back. And he says the Canucks need to play this style. What say you, Harm?
Is he referring to like their neutral zone forecheck?
Yeah, I think so.
I think what the Canucks have been doing has been working for the most part. In terms of the first two periods, why Boston's had some success, I think they did an excellent job of boxing out in the defensive zone, making it difficult for Vancouver's forwards to get on the inside, making it difficult to get screens, get tips, get deflections, because that's really the bread and butter of how Vancouver creates offense is some of those greasy chances, making it difficult for the goalies to see pucks on top of creating turnovers in the forecheck. Through the first two periods, I think Boston excelled in those areas. The third period is where the Canucks just completely broke through, ran them over, and you saw on Hronek's game-tying goal where, okay, you finally get that net front presence established with Brock setting the perfect screen, and it makes a world of a difference. So not only just with Boston, but I think the bigger conversation of heading into the playoffs, so it's going to be important for the Canucks to do to make sure they can manufacture offense. And from the opposition's perspective, what are they going to be looking to do to try and shut Vancouver down? It is a lot of those ingredients, because if you can slow Vancouver down in terms of their net front related offense, if you can slow them down in terms of creating turnovers off the forecheck, well, then we've seen some of the data from SportLogic, for example, that shows that Vancouver's 32nd in the league in rush chances. And I know they've gotten a lot of goals, but I think part of that has been riding on a bit of a shooting percentage bender. So I think that's what Boston did well in the first two periods. And then they completely collapsed, and I think they just blew another lead last night too. Mm-hmm. So they're shootout.
Yeah,
they're in a bit of a trouble.
Absolutely. Corey Anderson, Irf, I answered a question on Twitter about Crosby's favorite Crosby moment minus the golden goal. You did. Dueling hat tricks against Ovi in the playoffs. Welcome to Crosby Show in Canada. Shootout winner against the Habs and return from injury against the Islanders. Mine is actually, it's wild. It is goes back to 2019, the NHL All-Star game. So he's been named an All-Star 10 times in his career. And in Toronto, this past one is only the fifth time he participated. That All-Star game in 2019, he didn't show up to the Seals competition. He just showed up on, I think it was the morning or the night before the game, and he won the MVP. He rolled in. He's like, this is still my league. I think he had 8 or 10 points in that. And it was just wild because I think all the media was like, oh, this is the coming of sorts. Crosby's not going to be here. So it's McDavid. It's everything like that. But Crosby came in and took home MVP honors. What's yours?
I don't have a specific moment or highlight beyond the golden goal, but I will say just his overall stretch between 2010 to 2013, yeah, which is so unfortunate because he, of course, was hampered by and missed a lot of games because of concussions. But that's always a what if moment for me, because when he was healthy in that stretch, he was unstoppable. And keep in mind, in that time, it was harder to create offense. It was harder to score goals. And you just look at some of the numbers. He had 32 goals in 41 games in 2010, 37 points in 22 games in 2011, 56 points in 36 games in 2012. Crosby, at the peak of his powers, could play any style you wanted, right? He had the speed, the dynamic ability to trade chances, create offense, Connor McDavid style. Mm-hmm. He had the ability to control pucks down low like he was a grinder and just dominate off the cycle that way. He was elite defensively. Part of me thinks, oh man, I wish we got to see more of that Crosby. But then the other part of me goes, in light of those concussion problems, I'm also just grateful that he's been able to continue playing this long.
32 goals this season. Hopefully, I mean, maybe for the NHL and for his sake, he gets up to 50. Grady, what's your, if you have one?
Yeah, I was going to kind of piggyback off Harm just with all those concussions. And I remember there was people writing columns about, oh, he's fallen off, you know, concussion history. And then he goes out and wins back-to-back Stanley Cups, puts the team on his back and, you know, had a lot of help from Phil Kessel. And of course, that third line, and you have Malcolm and Letang. Interesting post today. I saw Canucks Army put out his first game in Vancouver when he had the penalty shot against Roberto Luongo, and Luongo stoned him and in the shootout as well. Yeah. But I love the water bottle pop against Jose Theodore early on in his career. Just like you talk about in Montreal, like, you know, he couldn't have set the scene any better. So yeah, incredible talent. I think sometimes people take him for granted just because he's performed so well at this level for so long now. He's definitely going to be, when it's all said and done, at the in the Mount Rushmore of NHL players.
Well, I think he already is, to be completely honest. You look at it, the guy's won everything you could possibly win at every level. I mean, yeah. So again, like you mentioned, your friends and people being excited to go and see Sidney Crosby. Like, that's one of the people you go see. You go see Crosby. You go see Ovechkin. McDavid obviously is worth the price of admission. The Leafs and Matthews and things like that. So should be an interesting one. Jeremy Lee, who else besides Gensel should the Canucks make a run for, Harm?
I didn't mind the Brandon Duhaime suggestion from yesterday. Of course, Frank Saravalli reporting on that. The thing that I keep coming back to is Chris Tanev would be the perfect fit, especially if you can re-sign him to an affordable extension. But with it being potentially a bidding war, I just don't like the acquisition cost, right? Like, are you going to have to give up a first-round pick? I don't like the idea of giving up a first-round pick for Tanev in a dream situation. If you could maybe just center a package around, let's say, a second-round pick, great. But I don't think that's going to be enough to get it done. So if it's not going to be Tanev, then I kind of just check down and look at some cheaper depth options. And when I do look at Vancouver's bottom six right now, and of course you're going to get Dakota Joshua back at some point, but the fourth line, that PDG spot I mentioned on the show yesterday, I like him a lot more as a 13th or 14th forward than I do as an everyday player in your lineup, just because you'd like maybe a little bit more edge in that spot, maybe a little bit more physicality, just so that the fourth line can give you some energy. Talk had spoken about needing more from that fourth line as well. So that's maybe an area that I look at as an area of need ahead of the deadline.
A couple names we've kicked around on the show, Irf, is Sammy Blay, and my favorite is Lawson Krauss, which will be a little rich, but that was before the Coyotes fell out of the race. You just never know what they're kind of up to now. He signed with term remaining. He's played for Talkett. He's a bruiser. He feels like the type of guy that would come alive in the playoffs. He can score on the power play. He can score at even strength. To me, he ticks a lot of the boxes. You just wonder, though, Arizona, like, they've traded so many guys out the last few years. Is that one of the guys that kind of want to keep around? But maybe perhaps Talkett goes to Rutherford and Alvin, said this is the type of guy, gritty, blue collar, hard nosed guy we need for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that the wish list from Talkett, they have it, right? They definitely have it. Rutherford and Alvin know exactly what Rick Talkett hopes and wants, and I think it's kind of a wait and see process here. I think that you mentioned Chris Tanev's name. There's four teams that are interested. It's the Leafs, it's the Oilers, it's the Canucks, and it's the Stars. And in my opinion, I think one of them is going to panic and give up a first round pick, and that's not going to be the Canucks. The asking price is going to be too rich. Is it a second and a player that's playing right now in the American League for Chris Tanev? Probably, right? And also for him, what's the extension cost going to be? If you go to a team like the Dallas Stars, you would be willing to sign there. You go to a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's probably, a good chance to maybe see if you can get out of the East there. And then there's obviously the Edmonton Oilers playing for your divisional rival and not having to go too far, but you get a chance to make a run with McDavid and Draisaitl, and he could definitely help that team.
Quickly, I want to ask you, what are your thoughts on the idea of Calgary potentially trading Tanev to Edmonton and the idea of a provincial kind of premium that they'd have to pay for being rivals? Do you believe in that?
No, not at all. I really don't. I think that the owners don't get involved, but I think that if that becomes their best option, then what are you really going to say?
Yeah.
If the best option is the Edmonton Oilers offering a first round pick plus something for Chris Tanev, why wouldn't the Calgary Flames trade that? If you're looking at, asset management and things of that nature, I think it's there. I think in years past, you look at some things and you really don't want to trade within the division. That's what some owners did. They didn't want to give their guys to a divisional opponent. But now, the Flames are kind of falling off a little bit too. So they should be sellers, to be completely honest. The Markstrom thing is going to be interesting as well. So we'll see where that goes. Ryan Wyden, what is Phil Kessel going to cost? Can they keep his salary low and go heavy on bonuses? The Phil Kessel thing is interesting because he's kind of just been basically having an open workout in Abbotsford for quite some time.
Yeah, it's kind of a mid-season training camp for him, which makes sense. And one thing that I was thinking about, and I don't know if you have a theory on this, but for an aging player in Kessel's 36, remember that last year he had to play through a full 82-game regular season. Do you think that having all this time off could give him more juice, give him more legs? Do you think that works in his favor? Or are you of the mindset that missing all that time is not good in the sense of it's going to be that much harder to get back up to speed?
Look, I think that there's some stock you can put into him going to skate in Abbotsford and being able to work with the guys down there. And, if he's being able to get some time with the Twins out there and things like that. But what type of player you're getting in Phil Kessel, the elite level talent that he did possess at one point in his career. And he has that. And I just don't know if he's going to be that down low checker that Talkett thinks or wants, or that guy anymore. Plus he's going to have to get into NHL game shape. And that's going to take some time. They have to sign him by the deadline if they want him to be eligible for playoff games. So I think that when you look at it, it's going to cost low. It's going to be a veteran minimum salary, obviously, if and when they do decide to do it. Or this could be another team that comes in. Who knows where they offer Phil Kessel contract between now and then. But I think that he's an option for them. I don't think he's going to be their first option. I still think that they do have some irons in the fire and other things that they want to decide on, which they should as they look to improve this hockey team.
Yeah, I think it makes sense as sort of insurance, not your plan A, but something that you look at as an option if you feel the need for it.
Yeah. Jesse, give us your Mount Rushmore. Let's do that tomorrow. Let's actually think about that.
Yeah.
And let's go into that tomorrow. But Jonathan Lekkerimäki has been having himself a hell of a season in Sweden. One of the top prospects, obviously, for the Vancouver Canucks, and has been absolutely elite. He's been lighting up the league up there. Today was hilarious. Like, you watched his game, and he was all over the place. He had 3 shootout attempts, Harm, tonight. It was wild. And he finally scored on the winner. Like, he's shooting the puck. He's playing at an elite level. And if you're the Vancouver Canucks and you're Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford and you're looking at it and you look at your prospect pool and how deep it's slowly starting to get, you have to be happy.
Oh, it's in a much better position than it looked like a year ago, because a year ago, especially before Lekkerimäki went off in the Allsvenskan playoffs, you were a little bit concerned at the fact that, okay, he'd been at least somewhat productive in the SHL in his draft year. Now, he had moved down the league and he'd been underwhelming. There were injuries. He was, of course, recovering from mono towards the tail end of his draft year, I believe. There was a lot of factors that he was sort of fighting through. In fact, I don't even think for a while he wasn't even expected to suit up in the playoffs last year, but that really seems to have been the launching pad where he seems to get his game back on track. Started the season strong right from SHL preseason, dominated the World Juniors, and has just continued being a goal-scoring machine. And it does make you reconsider as well. Of course, it's still going to take him some time. He's got to bulk up a little bit. It's going to take him time to learn defensive habits and be the type of player that Rick Tocchet would trust. But it does give you more confidence that, okay, this guy can maybe help sooner rather than being an ultra long-term project.
Yeah, and we should give credit to Sport Live 1 Direct out of Sweden for providing us with that video there. And just quickly on the mono thing, like, if anyone out there has had it, they know how draining that is on your body just to get back to what you were before. It can sometimes take months to do it. So, you know, there was a lot of people out there last year that were ready to write this kid off, and you don't write off guys who can score and shoot the puck like that, especially kind of jumping into pro hockey and working their way up. So, yeah, very encouraging story to track. And for those wondering to want to keep up with him, make sure you're following Dave Hall from Canucks Army. He's got all the updates you need.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, I mean, 3 shootout attempts, though, is still crazy. I remember, was it Jonathan Toews was first and then Oshie? Is that the way that went? And remember those World Juniors?
Oshie was in the Olympics.
Oshie was in the Olympics. Yeah. Sorry, yes. Toews was World Juniors. It was wild.
Yeah, that is probably the most memorable shootout game ever. It's the only time I've liked a shootout.
Yeah. I mean, if you had one player to pick, shootout, to end it. Like, you go and you look through the list of guys that...
UC Okanen.
Remember? Yeah, UC Okanen was unreal.
Kyle Wellwood, I want to say, was pretty good too.
Pavel Datsyuk?
Yes, Magic Man.
See, this is where I'm the data guy. I need the number. I need to.
No,
be able to
see, this is the best part. Numbers. Go with your vibes, dude.
Vibes.
You're picking a guy right now off the top of your head to end the game in a shootout.
Patrick Kane.
I know, that's what I was going to say.
Ah, oh, scooped you. Well, I was going to say Kuznetsov, but he's away on the.
Yes, Kuznetsov is
Panarin.
Not.
Panarin. I feel like he'd be pretty good. He's got the hands. He's been playing really well this year. That's my vibes pick.
There you go. Well, here's your vibes pick.
It was like pulling teeth out of me to get me to rely on
my
vibes.
He was shaking
here.
He couldn't get it. He couldn't get into the numbers. I just had to pull it out of him. Grady, what do you like?
Jokinen. I'll go Jussi Jokinen.
Thomas Vanek, I think, had a couple.
With a big slapper.
Big slap shot, yeah.
Wind up. Remember that goal against the Wild he scored? I think it was a big clap bomb.
Yeah. Who else was there? There were some good ones. Kyle Wellwood's another one the Canucks were really good on.
Let's see what the chat's saying here. Kucherov, yeah. Bedard, Datsyuk, Gretzky.
Canucks should use that.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting discussion. Like, there's definitely been guys over the years that have been labeled like the shootout specialist. And UC Jokinen was definitely one of those guys. Brief stint in Vancouver there.
Yeah.
The old Tyler Mott trade.
Yeah. Well, shootouts all in ECLs is something that's getting old for me too, though.
I can't stand them.
I agree. Time for our Betway bet of the day, brought to you by Betway. Big divisional matchup tonight in Colorado, Harm. Give me the Stars on the road. I know the Colorado Avalanche have the best home record in the NHL, but I really do like the Stars. I think that, you know, this team does have some good vibes. I'm a big vibes guy. does have some good feet, get some good vibes going through it. I like them. I think there's good value there as well. You must be 19 plus to play. If you choose to play, please play responsibly.
Let's roll with the vibes. I trust them.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, big vibe guy. Big vibes guy. I think that, look, I when it comes to, especially when it comes to betting and stuff like that, yes, the numbers are there and things like that, but a lot of people have been betting a Connor McDavid goal for the past 10 games, and what's happened? Nothing. He just gets apples.
Do you see his quote last night about how he's like, oh, I just want to get my assist total up? That's good.
Yeah, see, that's what makes him actually, like, now
some personality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He needs more of that.
Well, it's taken long enough. I mean, like, the knock on Roberto Luongo for the longest time was he didn't really have a personality. Then he left and got Twitter, and then things were awesome for him. But I think that these guys are, they obviously do have some personality. I think that Connor McDavid is just very selective with who and what he deals with. And I also think that it's the market that you're in. Like, you don't want to say anything that's going to be front page in Edmonton. Like, anything Connor McDavid does in Edmonton is going to be billboarded everywhere.
Why are you so pissy, Connor?
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, that was Leon.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just changing.
Yeah, no, exactly, yeah.
By the way, have you noticed the conversation on the Oilers right now through this mini skid? It's the
goaltending.
Drysdale especially is getting a lot of flack.
Yeah.
For the idea of, man, he's got some bad habits with the penalties, being lazy defensively. And it's surprising when, like, there's always been a bit of that outside narrative, but to have your own fans sort of, you know, picking away at that, it starts to carry a little bit more weight. So that's something to watch for as well, because since the winning streak, they have not looked good.
No, they haven't. And I think that when you look at that team, there's just so much pressure to make it to the Stanley Cup final. Like, with McDavid, with Draisaitl, I mean, their contracts are a couple of years away, but I mean, you still have to think about it and what they're going to do. And Leon Draisaitl's next deal is going to be an insane amount of the cap. Right, just because of the sheer numbers that he puts up,
and Rantanen too.
Yeah, like, it's they're going to be wild. Like,
also, they are going to have dead cap because of so Connor Brown signed for
minimum.
But then had performance bonuses of $3.225 million.
There's another guy that hasn't performed at all.
Has he
scored yet?
No.
Yeah, he's got 0 goals and 5 points. So because you signed him and thought. And made it a games played bonus instead of like a goals or points bonus. Now, because just for the sake of this guy being in the lineup, they're going to have a $3.225 million dead cap overage for next season.
It's wild. I mean, Edmonton's in trouble, but I think that when the cap eventually, maybe not next year, the year after, when it does go up significantly, they'll be okay. And obviously McDavid's going to get his, but the Edmonton Oilers are going to be an interesting team to watch here in the next 9 days as well, to see if they can try and improve and figure their stuff out before they head into the postseason. But always fun, Harm. Thanks for having me. Always fun doing this, and we'll do this again tomorrow. Obviously, Canucks conversation, an off day or day between games before the LA Kings on Thursday. Canucks and Pittsburgh Penguins. Sidney Crosby in town a little bit later on tonight at Rogers Arena.
Canucks conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.